Palisade Radio is preparing to release an in-depth report on the fundamentals of uranium, including our top three picks for 2019. Sign up today at palisaderadio.com to be the first to receive our exclusive report.
Welcome back to another episode of Palisade Radio. This is your host, Colin Cattell. On the line with us today is a new guest to the program. His name is Robert Bayliss. He's the managing director of Roskill, a company that's focused on producing in-depth research and reports, primarily for specialized or institutional or inside investors in the space. Today we're going to talk to Robert primarily on lithium and get a pulse on the lithium market. Robert, thank you for joining us today on the program.
Good to be here, Colin. Thank you.
Robert, you have a pretty extensive background in lithium. It's a space you've been following since before the equity rush came in a few years ago, really before Tesla became a mainstream name. And so that's given you a very high-level look at how this market has played out. For people not overly familiar with the lithium space, let's just start with an overview of what lithium's done since 2007 until now.
Great. Yeah, let's go back to the annals of time in lithium history. So I suppose, really over that period, the battery industry has always loomed large as this sort of growth vehicle for lithium as a sort of specialist chemical product, I guess is perhaps the best description of it once you've refined it out to the final products. But of course, that industry has had a lot of promise, but only until recently has that really been achieved, despite, the wants and plans of automakers and governments. Really, I think two things have sort of catalyzed it in more recently, and that is, a significant degree of focus onto emissions, both CO2 and particulate matter, and effectively, in China's words, cleaning the skies. That of course has helped to push electric vehicles front and center of this sort of campaign to lower emissions. Of course, the other side of it as well is economics. So previously, electric vehicles, as we see the dominant driver for lithium now and into the future, have started to fall in price. You may not see it necessarily in the sort of sticker price of a Tesla or some other variants, but certainly if you look what money you get for the range now out of a Bolt or a Leaf, it's a lot better than it used to be. And of course, that has opened up more customers to this market and making those cars an economically driven purchase, not just an environmentally driven purchase. So that's been the big change, I think, over the last 10 years or so, is that shift in really the sort of environment that we're seeing and the attitude towards electrification.
The bullish thesis for lithium would have been that there's going to be a demand coming in for batteries, demand that you just laid out, and that, of course, would drive a higher price of the commodity to incentivize new production. That's something that certainly happened, and lithium was an all-star performer for a couple years. And then, as happens with any commodity, once an incentive price is reached, you'll get kind of a plateau or a bit of a retracement and a plateau. And that price that is required to keep up with the demand. So if people were to look at the lithium price over the past few years, what does that look like in terms of what the increase was and where it is now?
Okay. I would say it's important to sort of differentiate maybe between the pricing that you tend to see sort of out there and quoted in the media or by certain companies against the reality of what is actually contracted between the main parties in the industry. And on that basis, if we talk about the sort of contract price, which forms the vast majority of transactions in this market, the price has certainly doubled or more than doubled over the last couple of years. In the mid-2010s, you were looking at a price really $5,000, $6,000 per ton, maybe a little bit more for lithium hydroxide than carbonate. And that now on a contract basis is up over $10,000 per ton. I think our sort of, you know, sort of weighted average for carbonate is certainly now around 14,000 for hydroxide, depending where you're looking at it. But I would say, you know, you're a little bit above that in most cases, although some large volume contracts that, you know, have legacy pricing arrangements, you know, can be below that, and some that are, you know, more based off the kind of short-term spot price equation might be a little bit higher. But the vast majority of product is being sold, you know, in that early mid-teens per kilogram sort of range. So that's been the big sort of change in the industry. You talked about sort of incentive pricing, and I think that is one element that is always very difficult to quantify in an industry. Certainly, where you have an imbalance or you see a, you know, sudden surge in demand, of course the price ticks up because of the shortage of the material, and its value therefore becomes greater. Quite what level you need to get to incentivize things is always open to question, but I think at certainly above $10,000 per ton for lithium carbonate hydroxide, you see a, you know, very strong case for adding additional production, assuming you have a demand growth story. And I think that's probably been a bit in this year and more recently that's perhaps got a little bit lost in the industry, despite, you know, forecasts being revised upwards in most cases for demand growth, you know, plus 20% per year over the long term, maybe even higher going out. It's sort of been clouded by this sort of falling spot price, which is sort of more based on sort of short-term supply and demand fundamentals. So the growth story is still there for lithium. In fact, you would arguably say this year it has improved, particularly when you look at, you know, the case of, say, Tesla with its output in the third quarter, the volume of Chinese electric vehicles sales as well in the first half, the first 9 months of the year. And of course, and now particularly a lot of investment coming from the downstream OEMs or related entities into lithium supply, companies striking offtake deals like Ganfeng, Tesla with, say, Kidman, Nemaska with, of course, FMC, and other sort of examples, of which they're starting to become many and more frequent. You know, you would say, yeah, definitely the demand story is still there, but the price is more of a short-term supply and demand issue. The key thing is, as with most mining industries, it's a cyclical business. So typically you would see a lull in demand at some point. But in the lithium industry, it's hard to see that at the moment. You'd be hard-pressed to see what might impact the markets. And therefore, you know, what is sort of going to happen? It's possible that, you know, the incentive price has to stay high simply to keep track with demand growth that keeps on increasing. I can't predict if you know, when that might change, but it's very hard to see it changing, you know, in at least in the short term, and definitely in the long term, over a longer horizon, if you sort of average it out, you know, 10, 15, 20 years out in the future.
Forecasts for EV adoption rates have varied depending on who's providing the forecast, but the financials that just came out of Tesla and the continued adoption in China of EVs certainly bodes well for the story. You just mentioned the cyclical nature of most commodities, but is it possible that lithium is almost in a super trend that will buck the commodity cycle if the EV adoption rate continues at quick pace?
Absolutely. But I think the thing is, you'd probably be hard pressed to say what might end that in the future. I mean, you know, a macro shock possibly, although would it dent the sort of grander ambitions to decarbonize the economy and the environment? Possibly not. It may be a hiccup. Trying to draw a parallel to it is difficult. I mean, people have said, you know, it's a bit like uranium in the sort of 2000s. You know, that came to quite an abrupt end, and has had some issues since. You'd be hard pressed to find another sort of trend. I guess in a way, you've kind of got to say, you know, just how much of this industry is linked to technology, and the effect that basically the automotive industry as the main driver is going through a huge technological shift, a bit like we've seen with portable consumer electronics, in a way that, you know, these are things that are changing people's lives. It's not necessarily a replacement, although it is a replacement. It's kind of a new tech that everybody wants. And, you know, once you have that type of story, it just keeps on growing. And ultimately, you know, you're saying at some point electric vehicles will become, you know, the dominant transportation medium, most probably. And that means that you need to get to a huge scale of automotive production and sort of economic scale that you've only really seen when new products have come in. And yeah, it's sort of, you know, a true potential S-curve type adoption for EV. And that means significant lithium demand to fulfill that, quite possibly over a very short period of time, given the sort of plans and the sort of aims of automakers and governments.
In the overall EV picture, what is the risk, if any, that lithium could be bucked in the near trend? And I've heard from several people that with the current setup of gigafactories and just the technology that exists today, that lithium is going to be the dominant battery for at least the next 10 years. Would you concur with that?
Yeah, that's always a hard one to call, because you never know what new technology might be up someone's sleeve that could suddenly appear. I think in the medium term, lithium is secure, largely because most automotive OEMs have maybe a 4, 5, or 8, 10 year platform strategy. And of course, what you don't want to do is necessarily disrupt that midway through the cycle. So you're seeing manufacturers now starting to launch their platforms for say the 2020s, Volkswagen MEB, for example. They're not going to want to change that because of the cost. And we hear already that it's very expensive to retool and remanufacture cars, and it's even more expensive to recall them. So you're naturally going to be conservative as an automotive OEM to sort of kind of have some, you know, length to your production cycle, and therefore that technology that you're basing it on, you know, is likely to be around for a significant amount of time. Of course, not everybody is set in terms of their platform. So, you know, it's possible that something could change. And definitely you see the rhetoric of the automakers looking at something like solid state. The problem there is that is it going to work for that type of environment? Is it going to work on the scale that you need to achieve for production of the cells for the vehicles? And that's something you don't have, and you've got to also tackle. Whereas lithium ion is mature as a sort of technology theory. Of course, it's very nuanced in terms of its makeup. Once you break down and look at the trends, for example, going from a lithium cobalt dominated cell in a cell phone or maybe early tablet to a, you know, NMC blend, NCA, these sort of nickel manganese cobalt or nickel cobalt alumina cathode materials or lithium iron phosphate. You know, that's become more variable, you know, a little bit less sort of predictable in a way as to what might happen in the future. But certainly with that technology, there is room to grow in terms of performance. We've not seen the limit hit yet. And that certainly will be the focus, I would say, over the next 5 to 10 years. Other technology may come in later, but, you know, will it sort of switch over from one day to the next? Probably not. You might see a gradual sort of influx of other technologies. It's hard to see another battery at the moment. There's been some discussed, some researched, and some good information put out there. Zingair, for example, is one that has got a lot of press this year. But as yet, you haven't seen, you know, the automotive industry sort of shifting focus to that, jumping on it. So I would say, you know, it's going to take some time for any new technology that's non-lithium based to make an appearance in the market and disrupt the current main driver for lithium supply in the midterm.
Excellent. Well, Robert, I think that provides a great segue to potentially doing another interview at some point in the future. Lithium is just one of the battery metals, and Roskill is well-versed in many commodities, including the other battery metals, so maybe we can get you back on and have a discussion on the nickels, cobalts, and vanadiums of the world in the future.
Absolutely. That's of course something that Roskill is certainly heavily involved across all of the battery raw materials, the active materials, the inactive materials, the casing, the packs. We look at it all. So certainly we've got the beat of what's happening and what that means for raw materials supply. Likewise, we've seen technology shifts, as I mentioned. If it changes, we're sure to see that appear in some other materials that we cover. So we're keeping our eyes out, and it'd be good maybe to chat through some of those nuances and maybe some other areas that may disrupt the market potentially at another time.
Excellent. Well, once again, it's Robert Bayliss with Roskill. Can be found at roskill.com. And Robert, thank you so much for coming on the program and joining us.
Thank you, Colin. Good to talk to you, and I hope to repeat this again in the future.
Think you understand the junior mining sector and you think that the participants in the junior mining sector are good people and kind people, hit the bid.
How violent that term could be, it actually could be quite violent. It could be a rip your face off uranium rally.
And the world is always going to need raw materials. It's going to need copper and gold and nickel and so forth.
Totally destabilized. Hey, troll, did you hear what's going on?